Thank you. Hi, my name is Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. My home group is the Scripps Ranch Men's Group. We meet on Monday evening at 7 o'clock. So if you're ever around Scripps Ranch at 7 o'clock, it's the best meeting held there at that time. I want you to be very, very welcome. I want to thank Randy and Damien for allowing me to share here today. It's always a pleasure, and I was thinking this is really going to be terrific. Nobody knows me here, and the first person I walk in and see is Bill. And Bill and I go way back. He saw me crawl in the doors on my hands and knees. And so I can't BS you guys because he'll call me on it. I know he will. I'm always amazed, always just astounded at the we come from such different backgrounds, different age groups, different parts of town, and yet so much of our stories are similar. And when I heard Keith this evening, it got my heart because there was that same similarity. I'm going to try not to bore you too much with what it was like, but there's a little bit of that there's so much that I want to share that really molded me into what I am today. I came from an alcoholic family. My mother was the alcoholic growing up. Her father was the alcoholic. It was absolutely rampant on my mother's side. But I had a choice. I didn't have to drink if I didn't want to. And I remember the very first time I drank. I was 13 years old. Friends of ours got together, you know, a bunch of guys in the neighborhood. I drank about a half a pint of vodka, barfed all over the front of myself, and said, "Boy, this is great. Let's do it again." It's just amazing. And I remember Keith shared the same kind of reaction. And I was off and running. I grew up down in Chula Vista, 5 miles from the border. So in those days, it was very, very easy to go across the border to get alcohol. And there I was, 14 years old, snot-nosed kid, sitting in a bar, drinking a martini, thinking I'm James Bond, 14 years old. And then it went on and on and on. By the time I was in high school, I was that guy that everybody kind of used to cringe and go, "Oh, no, he's here," because I was the one that had the bottle in my locker in high school. And that's the way it was. Somehow, I got into college. My dad, that wonderful, generous guy, helped me get into college. And I'll be darned if I didn't drink my way right out. That's how I paid him back. I drank my way right out of college. Alcohol was just a part of my life. It was, it governed everything I did, where I went, who I went with, where it happened. My first wife and I, notice that there are numbers in here. My first wife and I, she was alcoholic. We had two wonderful years together. I got to share this with you about my first wife. Bill has heard this story. My first wife was, I mean, she was a lot of fun. And she loved to have sex anywhere, any place, any time. Unfortunately, not with me. But so there wasn't a lot of long-term relationship there. I met my second wife at work. I was living up in Los Angeles at the time, and what really attracted me to her. I was just astounded. I was in the employee lunchroom, like the first or second day I was at work there. And there she was. She had a thermos bottle, and everybody else was having their chicken salad sandwiches or whatever. And she was pouring wine out of her thermos bottle. And I said, "This is the girl for me." We had 25 wonderful years together, but they were all alcoholic years. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. I went through a succession of jobs and DUIs. Notice there again, plural DUIs. And I never got the idea. I just thought I was the most unlucky guy that ever walked the face of the earth. Thought, if those damn cops wouldn't have been there, then I would have been okay. It never occurred to me that alcohol was the problem. Finally, I started to put something together that perhaps alcohol had something to it. And I used to call it, I have an issue with alcohol. An issue. Isn't that a clean, antiseptic term, you know? An issue with alcohol. But I wouldn't admit, I didn't want to use the A word. And I remember time after time, standing there in that shower, you know, that hot water beating down on my head at 6 o'clock in the morning, head just pounding, stomach upset. And I'm saying, today's the day. This is the day that I quit drinking. I'm not going to do it today. And that had lasted till about 1 o'clock or so. And then I was off and running again. It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun at all because I needed to drink. I had to do it. And things got to the point where I thought there's got to be a better way. And I went to a therapist. And I thought, aha, therapy, that'll fix me up. Because all she's got to do is just kind of do the magic and shake the beads or whatever they do, and you know, and I'll be great. So I went to the therapist, and I sat down, and I wasn't there 2 minutes before this therapist said, do you drink? And I said, well, of course, everybody does. And she said, how much do you drink? And uh-oh. So, I just lied through my teeth to her and said, oh, you know, just a couple of drinks before dinner, maybe a glass of wine or so with dinner. And, of course, a therapist, being worth her salt, she multiplied that number by about 8 and came up with the right number. And she says, I really can't help you until you stop drinking. And I want you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and just go there. And see what's going on. I think they can help you. When you stop drinking, then you can come back and see me. Ooh. Well, I thought, hey, yeah, I'll do that. So at that time, I was working over in Kearny Mesa. And the nearest Alcoholics Anonymous meeting was at the old NRC on Ostro Street in Kearny Mesa. And I kind of, you know, I was the guy that parked in the back and kind of slumped down like this to make sure nobody would see me and walked into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked up those steps and I thought, yeah, okay, this is a cool program. I can do that. Well, now wait a minute. I don't know if I'm going to do step 5 or not. And step 9, no, I'm not going to do that one either. But I can do the rest of them. I'll just kind of cruise here. So I hung around. I really hung around. And I stayed pretty sober. And it got to the point where I thought, you know, this is okay. I've made it for what, about 6 months or so? This is back in 1988. I've made it for about 6 months or so, and I think I can do this. And so come around, I believe it was 4th of July, we had some friends over, and they brought a bottle of wine. And I thought, well, and I was pretty cool with it. But I thought, well, I was barbecuing something. And I thought, I could have a drink. I'll bet you I can. Because, look, I've done this for 6 months now, and I'm okay. So I went in and I had a drink. That's all I had that night, was one drink. And I thought, aha, those AA people don't know what they're talking about. Because here I was able to have just one drink. 3 days. 3 days. And I was right back to where I was before drinking a fifth a day. And walked away from AA and I stayed away for 5 more years. But when I finally came back, in fact, let me tell you the story on how I came back. A colleague of mine, I was in the mortgage business. I was in mortgage banking. And a colleague of mine were down at, we worked at an office in Mission Valley, and we were sitting down having a cigarette. I smoked at the time. And he said, you know, I'm going over to an AA meeting over in Mission Valley, over at Drunks Only. You want to come with me? Now, why he would think I would want to go to an AA meeting, I'll never know. But I said, okay. And I walked in the door, and that's when I finally heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it would, as luck would have it, I ran into a gentleman there that I met back 5 years earlier in Kearney Mesa, John L. And John came outside and he said, Jerry, are you finished? Are you done? And I said, yes, John, I am. And John became my sponsor, and he still is to this day. We did the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this was absolutely astounding to me, that when I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, the second part of step one made some sense. Oh, my life is unmanageable. I'll be darned. And that's when it kind of plugged in together, and I finally saw it, because I just never could see it before. I thought I was a victim of circumstance, and I can play victim real easy. And so I began taking those steps, and I had a little problem with the God thing, too. Being a guy that was, my whole life was based on fear, and trying to be self-sufficient because I was full of fear. I wouldn't let anything else come into my life. So step two was a bit of a problem for me. And I called my sponsor, and I said, John, I don't understand step two. Look at these words. I don't get it. It's as though I was dyslexic. And came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I couldn't make sense of what that very simple declarative sentence was. Just couldn't understand it. And he says, okay, let's sit down and go through it word by word. And we did. And at that point, I finally had that openness that's talked about in the big book and in the 12 and 12. To keep an open mind, because I was so closed to the idea of a power greater than myself, I couldn't proceed. But finally, that openness happened for me. And that astounding moment when I read the third step prayer. Third step prayer is some of the most powerful words, I think, in the English language. Opinion. It's almost poetic. And I've tried to trace back to see if Bill W. borrowed it or lifted it from somebody. And it's, I think, as best as I could determine, He was the author of the third step prayer. But the idea, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me what thou wilt. To build with me. And this hit me like a ton of bricks. Because being in the mortgage business, that's aligned with real estate. And so I was very, very in tune with the real estate market. And to build with me, and to build, we've got to have that firm foundation. And that's what steps one and two for me were. That very firm foundation. And then the big one. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Wow. Bondage of self. That was so powerful to me. Because I was so full of self-centeredness. I'll go on and on. I won't bore you with it. But it made so much sense to me that if I could be relieved of the bondage of self, then I could better do God's will. And then I could carry the message. I won't go on with third step prayer, but it just meant so much to me at the time. I also started to really understand what Dr. Silkworth was talking about when he talked about this allergy that we have. Because I always thought alcoholism or this craving that I have was just something that only I had. And I got to share this with you too. I was one of those guys that did not read the foreword to my big book when I got it, because, you know, as we all know, the foreword just tells us what we're going to read. So why read that? Because I'm going to read it anyway. But I did finally read the doctor's opinion. And when the doctor's opinion spoke about the allergy of the body that creates the phenomenon of craving, man, that hit home with me. Because, you know, I have to share this with you. I have allergies. And when it gets Santa Ana conditions like this, I start sneezing, my eyes water, my headaches, you know, it's a mess. And I thought, well, how can I have an allergy? When I drink, my eyes don't water, I don't start sneezing. But what does happen to me, and here's what the allergy, the reaction my body has, because I had to look up allergy. It's an adverse reaction, body reaction. And that adverse body reaction that it created for me was the phenomenon of craving. I had to drink. So it all started to come together for me and make some sense. That if I don't drink, and if I work these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, things are going to change. And they really do and did change. I also wanted to share a little bit about things that I've been able to witness in Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 years into my sobriety, a tragedy occurred, which I'll share with you in a little bit. But at that point, my sponsor said, "Jerry, you have to get out of yourself." Because when this issue hit, this tragedy hit, I just became like a little withdrawal person, just into myself. And he said, "You know, we really need a GSR at our meeting, because we had four whole members at our meeting at Scripps Ranch Men's, and we really need a GSR." So I said, "Yeah, okay." And I was 2 years sober at that time. So I went to a district meeting, and it was District 11 over here on Zion Street, and the church over there. And Cheryl was our DCM. Perhaps some of you folks know Cheryl from La Mesa. And I looked at her, and she was such an experienced, knowledgeable person about Alcoholics Anonymous, about the fellowship, about how things work, about the General Service Office. And they said, "Read the 12 concepts." I said, "What? 12 concepts? What's that?" So she gave me the 12 concepts. She says, "This is a service manual." "Huh?" And so then I got to know about service through the service manual and being a GSR. One of the greatest experiences I think a member of this fellowship could have, because it's carrying the voice of your home group to the area and to General Service in New York, and it's hearing from those folks and bringing it back. So it's a two-way street of communication back. Same thing with the Coordinating Council. Coordinating Council does the same thing with AA locally, and whereas the area deals with AA nationally. And so I just encourage any of you that if you haven't had the opportunity to go into General Service to be a GSR, do so. You're going to meet the most wonderful people in the world. In fact, we have a big, big meeting coming up here next March. I don't know if you guys are aware of it. PRASA, the Pacific Region Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly. This is where alcoholics from all over the western United States, including Hawaii, Alaska, even alcoholics from BC Yukon, are going to come here. We're going to have 2,000 service-crazed alcoholics at the Town and Country Hotel. So if you have an opportunity, please go there. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful experience to help carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. But back to my stuff. In General Service, I found that this Alcoholics Anonymous is on that three-legged stool: unity, recovery, and service. And that's all. We all go together. We all hang on that three-legged stool. We miss one, we miss part of our fellowship. And so I just want to really encourage, if you going into that kind of service work. But then, you know, not everybody can be a GSR. It's being of service. And this is another thing I learned through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you don't have to be a GSR, you don't have to be a DCM or whatever it is. You can be of service by making coffee, by putting out the literature, by just sitting next to another alcoholic and saying, how you doing? Because that's so important. We always forget. I think sometimes we forget that we rush to the newcomer because they're the ones that we want to carry the message to, part of our 12-step work. But just as important is that to that newcomer is that alcoholic with 5, 10, 15 years under his or her belt, but maybe they're in pain. And you just got to say, how you doing? Are you doing okay? Everything all right? That's what service is all about. And that's another one of the wonderful, wonderful things that I was able to find and to a gift that was given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is when we be of service, it's getting us out of ourselves. It's getting honest. It's being with other people. It's letting ourselves go to the extent that we can serve God and others. What the heck does that mean, serve God and others? I was just really confused when I first heard that phrase. Well, it's just so simple. Just so simple. We start to tell the truth. This was the big one for me. I had to get honest. And when I got honest with myself, things were terrific. I mentioned earlier that I wouldn't do steps 5 and 9. They scared me to death. Because if I had to do step 5, that means I had to be absolutely honest with myself, with another person, and my Creator. And that just frightened me to death. But when I was able to do that, because I had taken step 4 thoroughly with my sponsor and found those defects of character, that was a surprise to me. I didn't think I had character defects. I thought I was just this nice guy. And I found out that dishonesty, resentment, fear, boy, they were just, I was just riddled with it, absolutely riddled with it. So when I did the 5th step with my sponsor, I thought it was going to be one of these things where we were going to spend about, a little while. God, it was a whole afternoon. But we were thorough, and he asked me again, is there anything more? And then he did something wonderful. He did, and it was absolutely textbook. He did precisely what our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us to do in step 5. He said, Jerry, I want you to go home. Get in a very quiet place. Take your big book down. Look over those steps we've taken so far. Think about what we've done, where we've covered. Is there anything more, anything that you've left out? And if not, then we're ready to proceed on. And that's what I did. And there is a cleansing for me that happened with taking step 5. It was as though I had that 50-pound field pack that I've been carrying around for 54 years, and I was able to get it off. And I felt the honesty and the real love of a power greater than myself at that point. At that point, I was relieved of the obsession to drink. It was gone. And it was only through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, through step 5. And I knew I could continue with the program from that point on. And then I was really anxious to get going with the rest of my steps. When I got to step 12, I think that is the most remarkable set of words. Oh, there's so many remarkable sets of words in this book. But step 12, where we are having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Not a result, not one of the results. It's the result. If you do the steps, you'll have a spiritual awakening. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. Okay, that's my marching orders. I got to carry the message. And to practice these principles in all our affairs. Oops. Because when I used to do that, I would say, well, everything but tax returns or, you know. No, in all our affairs. What a relief that is. Absolutely a relief, because then you can, I was to the point where I could look myself in the mirror and I could be at peace. I mentioned earlier about my wife number two that I wanted to share a little bit of information with you about. And I don't mean to tell her story, but it's part of mine. As I mentioned, she was alcoholic. We spent 25 wonderful alcoholic years. I got sober, and I tried to be an example. She could not get sober. The poor girl, she was at the Mac Center, McDonald Center, spin dry twice, and out at a wonderful place called a sanitarium called Rancho Labrie. I don't think they're in business anymore, but they're out in Belzura. She spent a couple of months out there, but when she came back, she always fell into the disease. And I talked with my sponsor about it, and he said, Jerry, you can't sponsor her. You can be the example. You can have her meet other people. But alcohol had taken its toll, really, physically, mentally, especially physically. She had cirrhosis. Doctor told her if she drank anymore, she would die. She tried. Oh, she tried. But the disease of alcoholism was so strong that she finally took her own life. I came home from a business meeting. I found her. She had shot herself. That's what alcohol can do. Alcohol is a killer. It's a poisoner. It will kill, quickly or slowly. We read about people who have one-car accidents where they're driving 100 miles an hour and go into a bridge abutment. Gee, I wonder what that's all about. Suicide. It's a terrible result that can happen from the disease of alcoholism. That was the tragedy that I alluded to earlier. I'm sorry. It's been 17 years now, and it still gets very, very difficult to talk about. She's been gone for that long. But I still go to meetings. And fortunately, I had the strength from a power greater than myself to stay away from alcohol, to get involved, to be of service. So I just want to encourage all of you to open your mind up to the activities that are available to us in Alcoholics Anonymous other than just our meetings. It's absolutely essential that we go to our meetings. Absolutely essential. But it's not the only thing. I remember hearing people say, meeting makers make it. Now, that's a cool saying. But it's not the only thing. We've got to carry the message. We've got to be of service. We've got to share with others, be honest, and surrender that power greater than myself. You guys have been terrific tonight. Thank you very much for allowing me to share. I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.